The title of the talk today is Masala Calling. Masala means spice, so Masala Calling. Many years ago for my birthday, someone that I love took me to the old part of Lucknow to choose a drum, because I was into playing without knowing what I was doing, just playing and singing. And it was clear as soon as we got to the drum wala, which drum was for me, was easy choice. And it was a good drum, just a folk music drum, not a fancy classical drum. And I loved that drum. It has strings on the sides with rings, so you can tighten the skins of the drums to make the sound better. And when you're not using it, then you can let the rings down so that it can relax. And I just figure that out by seeing and playing with the strings and the rings. It's not that I know anything whatsoever about drums. And sometimes when I left Lucknow to go somewhere else to get a visa or to make money, or, well, those were the only reasons I left Lucknow. Every once in a while, some friends would ask to borrow the drum while I was gone. And I said yes, knowing that when I came back, something would have gone on with the drum. So the first time the strings were broken, the tightening strings, and kind of knotted together in a weird way that still kind of worked. So that kind of friends. And then the other kind of friends also, who heard after so many years of having this drum and sharing this drum, that every time I moved the drum, it would rattle inside. And I didn't know. I thought, oh, I didn't notice that before. But I have one friend who knows a lot about music, and especially devotional music. Folk music, we could say. And he said, you need new masala in your drum. So masala is spice. And I thought he meant symbolically. I needed to have a different approach with my drum and be a little more spicy. And I said, yes, it's true. And he said, no, I'll do it for you. You need to get new masala in your drum. I said, what? I've had this drum for so many years. What are you talking about? There's no masala in my drum. So apparently, to make the sound more rich, I guess, they make a paste of masala and put it on the inside of the skins. And then when you touch the outside of the skins, it has a better sound. And after about 9 years, my masala had cracked and dried and fallen off. So that other kind of friend took my drum for me to the masala wala and had the masala redone. And the amateur that I am, I don't really know the difference, but that kind of friend also, while he was having the masala put on, got the new strings also, the tightening strings replaced. So they're not lopsided. They work better. I think it's good that we have all these different kinds of friends. Some of them borrow the drum and kind of say, oh, sorry. One time the skin was actually broken, not just the strings. Sorry. Not like, sorry, I've gotten the skin redone, but sorry, it's broken. We love these friends also. These friends who are outside of us and inside of us. And it's a good thing we also have those other friends who know about the inside of the drum and what, how to take care of the inside of the drum. So first of all, I'd like to say us, here we are. And sometimes we can have the feeling when we go inside or go into meditation. We might hear something rattling, and we think, I have never heard that sound before in my drum. But we think, well, it must have been there and I didn't notice. Something's rattling, something's maybe a little bit off. And instead of asking someone who knows about drums, hey, do you happen to know what might be going on here? Do the drums have rattles inside? So that we could hear something new, a new perspective. If we could be ready after however many years it's been to learn something new, that we never had any idea where we might find the masala. And even if it's just a small thing, someone like me doesn't really hear the difference when the masala is rattling around dried or when it's really properly put on the drum. A sense of being willing to take care in new ways. To hear about spice and to learn about spice inside us, even when we can't really tell that subtle of a difference in us. Second of all, sometimes we need to adjust our strings and our rings. In order to really play fruitfully and not kind of just keep banging ourselves, but to actually play. Sometimes we need to really carefully tighten the strings. And what do we do when we hear about tightening? Many of us end up tightening in the wrong way, in an old way. We'll tighten so that we break. Instead of trying to hear ourselves, our own voices, and how we sound to ourselves. Tightening a little. For example, if we hear ourselves repeating to ourselves the same old story, if there could sometimes be a little more firmness of supporting ourselves so that we're not just hanging around with the same friends all the time. Sometimes those friends who know what they're saying. I feel it's easier for us here in the middle of a forest, surrounded by lakes, with all of these birds, in a place where leopards and cobras still live, we are in their home. That we could more easily feel our rhythm. And rhythm is a feeling thing. I've noticed this a lot with Gyan these days, where I am one of the people who has made the schedule that we're going by. And most of the time, the last few days, my life hasn't fit that schedule. This is only the third time I've gotten to come here in the last 4 days. Because what I think is a good rhythm for us has not been matching the rhythm of my son. So it's been really great. It's been really fun. Every time I think, oh, I'll get to go to the hall at 10:15. And then at 10:10, Jan definitely needs me and no one else. So every time there was the slightest agenda, life had a different flow. So what I mean by rhythm is probably not what we think of as rhythm, something that's predictable and the same again and again. Some of us need to practice and develop more of that steadiness, that firmness, as a way of loving our life. We could hear the spice, the masala, calling us into steadiness. We can feel how good it is just to eat breakfast at the same time every day, for example. And recognizing that goodness. Valuing that as guidance for your life. Others of us need less strictness. Or we could say sometimes all of us need more firmness. Or sometimes all of us need less strictness. Sometimes all of us need to really listen to the beat that's not coming from my hand. That more subtle, that we're not just overpowering our situation with what we think is our rhythm. And many of us, a lot of the time, really need the confidence to play loudly enough that we contribute our rhythm to the overall, to the wholeness of us, to each other. Sometimes it just seems to happen wordlessly, being in nature, that we feel more in tune with a kind of natural rhythm. In a very simple way, it's much easier to wake up in the morning when the birds have already been awake for hours, for example. But even in ways that are not so easy to point out, we could just feel ourselves maybe slowing down and sinking down, spreading out, being moved in a different way. I think that this is more or less all we can do is let our rhythm take us over, play us. So a rhythm that surprises us, that 1 second seems to be going this way and then playfully turns another direction. I think that we understand rhythm as being in control of our lives. I'm in a good rhythm. I know what's coming next. Sometimes we need a period of time like a medicine where we know what's coming next. As a medicine, but not as a food. Does that make sense? Any sense so far? Or if there's any questions so far?
Can you repeat the last time with the food and medicine?
Okay. As a medicine, sometimes we need to know what's coming next. If there's been a big trauma any time in my life, and I'm so out of rhythm that I can't and don't feel any natural rhythm coming through, hard to connect with even body rhythms, it can be so helpful that I have a strict rhythm in a way, that I know what's happening next and next and next for a while. Sometimes a day is enough, sometimes 7 years is enough. But I'm calling it a medicine, not a food, not something to live on for the rest of our lives. Any other questions? Yes.
How can you notice between this noise of the masala and the noise of, I want to say, in aviation we call it a solo noise, like the first time you're alone, you hear the same noise, but you say, oh, it was never there. So how can you notice if it's these noises, like I'm first time in meditation, and I say, whoa, what's going on? Was it there all the time, or is after a long time new masala need to be?
Yeah. In a way, it's the same thing. But if we've been playing the drum for a long time, we tend towards arrogance. We tend to think we already know it. And we tend to be less willing to be completely taken apart and dump out the dried, cracked stuff and put some fresh spice. That would be one answer. There's also a difference in how it resonates in us if we are coming into a silent retreat or a period of silence, and as the outer silence starts to happen, we suddenly notice the inner noise and, whoa, my mind is so busy. That's a good surprise, and it shows us that there is some, let's call it natural rhythm, that can hear how out of rhythm that is, and that's a good recognition. And then it's a different feeling, a different resonance, when we hear, so to speak, something so in tune coming through us that we never heard that before. I never thought that could come through me. That's a different kind of whoa. And we could say it's almost like two different ways to be motivated to let it be all taken apart and fresh. One is because we're just horrified at how out of rhythm our equipment is. And another is that we're so terrified of how wide the music is that the equipment is capable of. Most people feel terror, some people don't, when we see. How much love is there, or how wide we really are. Any other question? Or comment? Yes, Lynn.
It seems like you're saying kind of behind all of this, to be able to have the wisdom to see ourselves having a lack of rhythm and perhaps needing the rhythm, and then or not having it and needing it, or just to see it, the situation of the very moment that we're in, and to be able to identify that and see what make a wise decision about this. Like you were saying yourself as an example.
I would say it more with a different emphasis. When a supportive situation allows us to see or feel or hear that something in us is out of rhythm, which might be a way of thinking about something or someone or oneself, for example, the very fact that we can feel that this seems out of sync, it feels busy, or it feels blocked. The fact that I can feel that means I'm in contact with another kind of more flowing rhythm, more subtly powerful rhythm. And as I start to let kind of pour more and more of my life into this happy rhythm, we could say, in general, there starts to be more and more a natural tendency towards the subtle, towards the more subtly powerful, natural, wider rhythm. So sometimes we need to kind of step back and try to see clearly and make a wise decision, but it for me, it's more like a less of a decision and more of trusting the feeling that feels more expansive or the rhythm that feels fresh. And trusting when all I can do is feel this is not fresh. This is cracked and dried. What I feel with rhythm is that when we allow, let's call it happy rhythm, but not like superficially happy, deeply happy rhythm invites the song. So what we could be involved in is giving over to the rhythm, using our feeling to feel what is out of rhythm, feeling the aliveness of being in rhythm. The softening, the power, and then our being, it's like kind of is called by that rhythm to be the song that kind of floats with that rhythm. So the kind of things that we might call a moment of grace or a moment out of time. Or a moment when things were in place. That's what I would call our being song. That gets called towards the rhythm. So those are the moments of that song, that melody, are the moments when maybe we see ourselves being more kind or more wise or more quiet or saying something that we didn't know that we knew, saying something that we don't know, but it's true. That's the song. That's what I mean by the song. So if we could be not too busy with doing the rhythm part, giving ourselves to the rhythm and leaving space for the song that we can also enjoy. That's what we're here for, I think.
I really relate when you say about the song, and it's really beautiful, and I've been experiencing that, but then seeing my mind go right back into wanting safety and and just blocking it again and again and just going into this long, boring story that come in, it's okay. I'm just wondering how not to get frustrated about that.
Yeah. There's one kind of game that I like from a book that we are reading in Lucknow, some teachings that happened in Hungary during World War II. And they talk about how a challenge is a gift to a human being, but we tend to take it as a problem and a burden. And so they just, this trick is turning it around instead of saying, oh, I'm still caught in that same old story, or it's still so difficult. They say, it's already so difficult. Like looking forward to the challenge. Trusting that the song is so much what we are, that it's not that we need to be busy keeping it going. And wherever it's rough, that is the masala calling. That's where it's spicy. And where we are called to find a way to accept the challenge as an honor. So there's a teacher that you've probably heard of, Byron Katie. And she talks about looking forward to what we most fear or where we think we're most broken, that challenge. There's one time she was talking to a man who is dyslexic. So that's when you try to read but you see things backwards. The mind has crossed wires. And He was saying how painful it was for him that he couldn't read, and how many situations in public, in front of other people, that it was assumed that he could read the receipt or the newspaper or the check. Could he write the check and put the zeros on the right side of the numbers? And this was the burden he was carrying. This was his same old story. And then she said, tell me, I don't know how many good things about your situation. Let's say 3 or 10, doesn't matter. Tell me one good thing about being stuck with that, not being able to read. And so it turned out that he was the owner and director of a business. And so he would hire people to read things for him and tell him what they said. And then it was a public teaching, and the whole room was laughing, like, how lucky, you don't have to read all of that stuff. You have people that do it for you. First she was like laughing, you have a business? You see yourself as that one who as a child was probably called stupid in all the classes and so on. And you are running a business and you don't even have to read all of that that we have to deal with. So that's another way, like even going into the content of the story, how is this the best thing that ever happened to me? That's one way to play. I suggest playing it in many ways, like the variations on that theme. That's your specialization. But if we could take it somehow as a calling to be a little more spicy. So another way sometimes is to feel, what is the need that I'm even embarrassed to say that's there in that repetitive, in that boring, non-alive rhythm? And what if I just decide not to be embarrassed? So it's like feeling the wildness in what, by resisting it and thinking it's wrong, we are like caging the animal, caging the rhythm. Even in the contents of the repetitive story, what is being called forth from me that maybe I'm afraid of because it's different from what I've seen, from what I've admired? Or no content and just the wildness, just the spice of it. It burns. Where does that energy really want to go? It doesn't want to be doing this. And if there's any kind of have to in the repetitive story, it could be that the wildness in us is just saying, no way, I don't have to. I may be called to, but I don't have to. If you want to go into details, we can. just to say it's open. But yeah. Anything else?
What happens if you lose your rhythm?
Yeah. If you lose your rhythm, what happens? So tell me what happens.
The flow stops. You're kind of at a spot where you're not sure what to do next.
Mm-hmm.
You're not sure how to get back in.
Mm-hmm. And then?
And then you find it.
Uh-huh.
And then you're
in. Yeah. Lenny G, this is something about the decisions, actually. I remember in an Indian text somewhere, talking about the importance of really being in, let's say, the deepest natural rhythm that we can access, allows the decision-making part of the mind to just be very simple and wise. So not that we need to do it. We just go to the rhythm. And then that will fall into place. And sometimes we get out of rhythm, and that's part of the play, because then we get to try to jump back in. And that helps us learn a little more about the rhythm.
And about what pulls you out of the rhythm.
Okay. What pulls you out of the rhythm?
What pulls me out of the rhythm?
Mm-hmm.
Unconscious material. It's like what I call it, the games,
mm-hmm.
unconscious games.
Yeah.
And I would say that. But
okay. Could you hear?
Yeah.
She said, I would say that it's the unconscious material, and then she said, what I call the games. So she said, I would say it's the unconscious games that call me out of rhythm. And I would just question all of us, like thanking you for bringing this up, because getting out of rhythm and then getting back in rhythm can highlight what pulls us out of rhythm. And we could say, ah, yeah, that's true, it's the unconscious games. But in a way, the playing of a game, there's something in us that's very alert playing the game, looking for every chance to play the game. And so it could be like a little bit putting on the side to say it's unconscious. It's true in a way, and it's also not true in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Something in us is really ready to play the games.
Mm-hmm.
And catching many chances to do it.
Do you mean like an ego? Or what do you mean by that?
Yeah. I'm allergic to the word ego. But, so, I would say like the ways we think we need to protect us, and that we do without noticing if we need to protect us, the ways that we, and the ways that we project us. Because we think it's too much to be human.
I have a hard time not comparing my rhythm to other songs that I hear, and like other people are saying, losing my rhythm.
Yes.
Because it doesn't
yes.
fit with what I'm hearing.
It looks like, yeah, it doesn't fit in. But that looking like I don't fit in is the unconscious game that I'm playing, that I don't belong. And so, love, 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 love. Which you have a lot. So if we can accept from the beginning that my song is going to be different from your song, that's part of the fun. That's the fun of the music, and it's the fun of actually finding each second the song. My song doesn't even look like my song, much less your song. The fun of when there's enough settling in the being, the fun of not knowing what's coming next in my song. Neither the rhythm nor the song, nor the melody. I think it's again this reversal. What we've been told is that we are not allowed to and we can't hear it. But we know that it hurts when I think I can't hear it. And when I think my song is wrong. Even when we think my song is right. It's going too far. The very fact that that hurts, and therefore maybe I want to get out of here, or I want to try harder, or whatever, secondary game. The fact that that hurts is already showing us our capacity to feel another kind of rhythm. And so instead of focusing on how much it hurts and how much it hurts, we can notice that the fact that I can feel this hurts means something in me knows this does not belong here. It's not me that doesn't belong here. It's not my song that doesn't belong here. It's that old belief. Which is partly unconscious game that I don't belong, but it's partly very conscious. It's partly somewhere we accepted against our inner knowing that I don't belong. We accepted it. So we can slowly, slowly, drop by drop, practice unaccepting that. And the vastness of the challenge as an honor, showing how much resources you have as a human being. You can say more. You don't have to be convinced. Like me trying to play the drum. So it's this turnaround of already there are some moments that I feel the song, and I know I feel the song, I recognize the song. And in the moments where the other music is so loud, it is disturbing. I can feel that it disturbs. So what is it disturbing? This is lucky. Most of the time we could go along and think, that's the real song. But something in us feels disturbed. So trusting, this feels disturbing, but then not being moved from that disconnection of, for example, comparing myself, but from the sense of already I've heard some other music, already I feel this disturbs something. It's playing the drum in the wrong way or the string in the wrong way, too tight, too loose. So what if I loosen it, in your case? Instead of, we would tend to go tighten this, if we are already too tight, we tend to tighten it more to try to find a solution for comparing mind. So if I can feel this is disturbed, it's too tight, let me loosen it. Let me even take a rest from trying to find my rhythm. That's like pulling the rings up and letting the skins just rest. It's natural in us that we feel disturbed by comparing mind. Yeah. Okay.
I think for me what is happening, you talk about song and rhythm and moving in and out, and sometimes I ask, do I have a song?
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. So I think this is a lot what Julia was saying. And I think that is the big danger here, that we believe that we don't have a song. So what I want to say is we can't not have one. And the music or the voice that's saying maybe I don't have one and they all have one. Or whatever they have or don't have, I don't, yeah, good. At least. That I don't seem to have a song. Yeah. If we could feel how that very thought hurts. It's not only a thought also. It's more of a tiger, but I can feel that that hurts, that that disturbs something. And so then it is a training to come out of that. So like it can happen on retreat, we may sing a song, and then the song, maybe it wasn't a good song for you, and it's going in your head, for days. Or a song from, very often, 1980s rock, people mention. And it's okay, if we can just come, like, okay. Don't tell us which one. We can literally train by, look, I'm singing that song again. Let me choose a song I like, at least, and do that one. So when I hear myself saying, I don't have a song, let me choose a song I like, which would be, maybe I have a song. Or, I am the song already, which is what I'm saying. As a human being, our being is that, what I mean by song. And so, exactly, What's your name?
Yael.
Yael. Good to meet you. Exactly what Yael G is saying. I also feel is our main, not for everyone, but for maybe most of us, our main difficulty in hearing the music. For many reasons, from many different inputs from all around us. And it could sound differently to different people. It could be more that I'm not good enough to be a song, or I can't hear it, so it can't be here. It could be more about feeling not loved or feeling I can't get it right. It could be different kind of versions. But I would say this is, for many, many of us, much of the time, this is the main area to take the pressure off and care for. So it can be like reprogramming the machine, like slowly, slowly erasing the old songs. And finding what makes your heart sing. And giving time to that. With a word that you might repeat, with things that you do that bring joy. With sometimes just noticing it hurts. That means something is sensitive to this disturbing. So that's where I would say we need the firmness to protect that those little maybe I can hear the song. As human beings, we can stand up. So not only, I had this image the last week or so, not only kind of fuss around, keep going around the foundations and kind of cleaning up here and there. Oh, here's a dead leaf. But starting to feel what makes the heart sing. Starting to actually look, the foundation is here. And starting to do some walls, something completely different. And related. Really, on that basis of our wish for seeing clearly, being the song, softening or whatever. Right there, putting some walls. Not walls that separate, but something that's going up. Also, as humans, we have language, which is a power that we don't know how to use very well. We could notice in silence how powerful words can be, for better and worse. Words in our heads, so to speak, and words that we hear. Which is one reason, like, that when we are in silence, it's good to really be in silence, because one word from someone can really get us unnecessarily out of rhythm. But caring for the language that's happening in our minds and knowing the power of that, if I hear the words, maybe I don't have a song, feeling the power of that and writing new lyrics. Sometimes on purpose, we could just do the opposite. No song? Okay, yes, song. And other times, with some patience, hearing what words specifically want to come through, helpful words. I have a friend who worked for many years with apes in a language research center. And it's amazing what they're doing there, but like the kind of language is really about where gyan is now. So it's really something that humans have, a power that we need to learn how to use. One time, the woman who was the head of this research center really loved those apes. Like a child, we could say. And especially one of them who was like the language star. But it's like pointing to a board and saying, recognizing a character, the pink bunny is here. You know, pink bunny has a ball. Pointing to symbols on a board. Not really vocalizing so much. And one time, sometimes the director would let this one ape a little bit more free in around the center, not just in the cages. And the ape was in the staff room where there was a machine for, in India they're called cold drinks, what are they called? Yeah, like a vending machine of beverages. Drinks, canned drinks, whatever. And there was one option was orange soda. And the director just got so excited because she was sure that the monkey had said, I want an orange. And all the other staff were really sure that the ape had not said that. So just accepting this power, feeling what words go with the song. And how often less is more in the song. Someone had wanted to speak, I think, before. Yeah.
When the song is too loud, not too loud for others, too loud for me now, or maybe at all, it can be denied, but...
You mean you feel like bursting with...
Yeah. I want to keep it outside, but it's,
yeah.
It's very loud, and
yeah.
I keep hearing it,
yeah.
And maybe I'm not ready.
It can easily happen on a silent retreat that we, because of the pressure not to express, it feels like I'm going to explode any second. And so, a couple of options. One is if you can just internally take off some pressure, feel a little more free, because the idea that maybe I'm not ready, maybe this is too powerful for me, is a main reason that we go looking for excuses, in other words, games. Yeah? And when there is, let's say, joy, which is basically our song, our model of joy is that it has to go out. And a training with joy is that we need it in. So like letting the bones, letting everything just in, which is another way of taking off the pressure. Like not setting up this story where I'm on a silent retreat and I have so much. Ah. So then another way is there's a lot of space, and when you're far enough away, see what happens. So one other hand.
I'm enjoying the metaphors. I'm not sure I'm getting something. Are you making a distinction between rhythm or in rhythm and being?
Song?
Song being.
Yes, I am. But it goes together.
Say a little more about that, because now you just use the word joy and that resonates, but I don't see how that's distinct from in rhythm.
Right.
So
rhythm, I think, is what we can do. We can direct our energy towards our rhythm, away from our expectations and prejudices and so on. As in nature, there is like winter, spring, summer, fall, or in India, it's different, monsoon, transition, cold season, etc. But every time is different. One year there's more frogs, another year there's more ants, etc. But it has a way of feeding itself. Then the being as song is what naturally comes when we're in rhythm. So we could just say, being in rhythm calls joy. Being in rhythm calls what looks like courage, or masala, try it. The song part is the part that we can't do. And we also can't really escape, because we are. But it's like there's a difference between a song going on in my head and a song in every cell. When there's a line from Rumi, your song, wished for song. So like we let life, and let us feel that life wishes for our song to come through. And the rhythm is more or less the platform, the base. Chew on it and try it, and then let me know. Okay, so this is the last one more. Sunamiji. So when I used to play the drum, I would play when no one could hear me. Well, when it mostly no one was listening. So in the beginning, it can be good to either play with other beginners where we know we all accept some wacky music is going to happen. And then life will call us to keep singing, or being sung, as we like, even when it could look out of tune. So just one small example. There's a woman teacher who is really into devotional folk music, an Indian teacher, as a practice, and into feeding people as a practice. And she puts it together in the kitchen, singing and making food. And sometimes when they're making a lot of food for thousands of people for a spiritual party, people will come and want to help in the kitchen. And sometimes they might not be able to get in tune while the food is being made. And for this woman teacher, it's better that the food contains the song fully. But her way is not to like block people at the door and say, no, you're not in tune, but just to sing. And when someone's out of tuneness is strong, her experience is they can't stand to stay in the kitchen. They themselves go out of the kitchen. So what I mean is not so much about excluding or including people, but the possibility of changing your environment, changing a situation. That's one thing. Another thing is sometimes I believe in my song, and I've gotten, in a way, a little bit confident with it and then used to singing it this way. And so then if there's dissonance, I don't take that as feedback into the song, incorporating that, letting the song change. And another way is even when there's tension or conflict that's not resolving through normal means, we can accept may never resolve. We can take it again as a challenge for we who wish to really learn to sing and keep learning to sing. Like as a moment where maybe I need to take the drum apart and put new masala to find the song that even tension is allowed, conflict is allowed, and it doesn't need to draw my attention or take my energy. The song is enough. Even when there's destruction going on, which there is. It's like letting an even wider song, like wide enough, even in that turbulence, for there to be joy going on. That's the best. So let's come back to each our silence and song. And we have time for walking, enjoying the hall, and individual interviews with Ajay and Gemma. Thank you very much.